Okay, roll call on consent.
Lou?
Yes.
Lou, aye. Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Berryhill? Block? Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Galgiani?
Aye.
Galgiani, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hill, Padilla?
Put that back on call for the absent members. Item number two, we have a motion. Roll call, please.
Motion is due pass as amended to appropriations. Lou?
Yes.
Lou, aye. Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Berryhill? Block? Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Galgiani?
Aye.
Galgiani, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hill, Padilla?
I'll put that bill back on call. Item three, SB 1119. We need a motion.
Move the bill.
Roll call.
Motion is due pass to appropriations. Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Berryhill? Block? Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Galgiani?
Aye.
Galgiani, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hill? Padilla?
Put that bill back on call. Item number five, SB 1242. Call the absent members.
Motion is due pass to appropriations. Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Hill? Padilla? 7-0. 7-0.
Are there people still missing?
Yeah, Hill and Padilla.
Okay, we'll put that bill back on call. Item number six, SB 1243. Call the absent members.
Motion is due pass to appropriations committee. Current votes 5-0. Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Hill? Padilla? 7-0.
Put the bill back on call. Item 7, SB 1244. Call the absent members.
Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Hernandez, or Hill? Padilla? Okay, 7-0. Back on call.
Put the bill back on call. Item 8, SB 1245. Call the absent members.
Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Hill? Padilla? 7-0.
I put the bill back on call. Item number 9, SB 1246. Call the absent members.
Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Hill? Padilla?
Can you just one second?
1246.
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 8-0. On call.
Put the bill back on call. SB 1247, item 10, call the absent members.
Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Hill? Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye.
Put the bill back on call. Item number 12, SB 1416. Call
motion.
The absent members.
We need
or do motion. We need a motion.
Move the bill.
Roll call.
Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Weiland?
No.
Weiland, no. Berryhill? Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Galgiani?
Aye.
Galgiani, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hill? Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. Okay. 6-1.
All right.
On call. Leave it on call.
Yeah. Did you want to close or
leave
take
more call.
Questions?
I can close or
whatever. Okay. We're now going to have SB 1215 being heard again, and Senator Hernandez. Are there additional questions from the committee on this bill? Senator Weiland.
Just a comment. I'm not going to vote on the bill today. I really respect Senator Hernandez's work on trying to control costs and to deal with AC. I think it's very important. I just think there are just a lot of very complex issues that are still out there, and that's the reason. Not that I don't think we need to control costs, but for that reason. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Padilla.
Recognize there's a lot of obviously very thoughtful testimony both for and against this bill. people with significant credibility and experience and perspective on both sides of the bill. Mm-hmm. Senator Hernandez and I had a chance to talk during session to kind of just explore the one big question in my mind. The folks that came up and testified in opposition gave sort of story after story of maybe unique and extreme circumstances, emergency situations where, but for a very timely and near immediate access to a CT or something else, you know, what could have happened health-wise. And I had a similar experience myself about 7.5 years ago. My situation unique. I was, you know, in a Kaiser setting, so it's all kind of inclusive there, but something I can certainly relate to. But just wanted to afford, either by way of question or afford Senator Hernandez an opportunity to kind of respond to what I think is amongst the more significant concerns about the bill in emergency situations when somebody does need quick or immediate access to, you know, the imaging that's addressed in the bill. How do we know that we're not compromising public safety and public health through this interest of gaining more efficiencies in the healthcare delivery system?
You and I spoke, and I think there was a question that was brought up as well with regard to a managed care plan. And in your particular case, you had mentioned you had Kaiser. What this bill does, it excludes anyone who's licensed under Knox-Keene. You also, I don't know if you were here, I know people have been kind of coming and going throughout the testimony, but if you look at the system, the way it works now, entities that don't have imaging centers that refer on a regular basis through coordinated care, anything that's dealt with in an emergency situation obviously rises to the highest level. So let's say you have a physician's office that suspects a mass, a rupture, a brain tumor, et cetera, then obviously they would call immediately to a imaging center that they don't have a financial interest to make sure that it's done at its absolute highest priority or in the emergency situation. The system does continue to work. And as I mentioned, and I'll say it again in my closing, there was great testimony in the opposition with regard to unique cases. But I would also say that those exact same cases occur where there is not a financial interest as well. So the system ultimately does work.
Okay. I appreciate the response and the explanation. I still have reservations about this. I know it's one of those bills. That's why there's so much testimony both for and against, because it's a tough one, in some ways a controversial one. But I do agree and commend you for the work that you've been doing, not just when the Affordable Care Act was passed, but initial implementation, policy leadership you've demonstrated in the legislature, and now, you know, further implementation and cost savings that you're trying to achieve. Happy to make a courtesy motion just to allow the committee to go on record with the bill, but okay, knowing that the conversation still has a long way to go.
Right.
And
Thank you.
I'll reserve the right to maybe vote differently after today than
Thank you.
The way I do today.
Before we take a motion, any other questions? Did you want to close? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'd love to.
Right.
First of all, Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion. And as I made in my opening comment that I believe we're going to have a crisis when it comes to cost containment. And if you look at all the constituents that we serve, but more importantly, individuals who are going to be purchasing health insurance, there's several elements. The first element is the actual card itself and the fact that they have an insurance. The second element is the capacity issue. But the third element to the consumer is probably the most important, is the cost. The success of the Affordable Care Act is based on the subsidy portion for those who can't afford it. But ultimately, they're going to make a final decision based on cost. And if we're going to implement this successfully, we have to make sure that we, as elected officials, make sure that we control cost. These are extremely difficult conversations. I get it. I understand. And I know that. But there's one thing that we all agree on, is that there is a problem. And the evidence is phenomenal. If you look at it, it's pure data driven that shows that there is overutilization. There have been concerns about the rural community, which I've tried to address. I haven't addressed it completely. There's concerns about the emergency, which I've tried to address, that we could potentially address. There are concerns about fraud and abuse, which, yes, we could or we should address those concerns. And here's what I propose, and I know how I understand and I can count. I think this bill is going to have some real problems. The concern I have is I was hoping that this bill would have been heard last week. The reason why I want it to be heard last week is today is the last date of hearing before, and if I don't get it out today, it's done for the year. Hearing the concerns last week, had there been, would have given me a week's time to work with all the interested parties of the members. Now, granted, with this controversy of an issue, I don't think there will ever be consensus on both sides to address, like, Senator Barry Hill's concerns. If I could, to address Senator Weiland's concerns, to address Senator Corbett's concerns, or Senator Block's, or Senator Calgiani's concerns. Saying that, if you would be willing to allow me to move this bill out, you have my absolute commitment that I will not move it to appropriation unless I can address most, if not all, your concerns to see if how we can address the most egregious problems to this particular bill. But because this is the last hearing, I haven't had that opportunity to sit down with you. And I was hoping to have done that, but last week I couldn't because it was held over for the final week. So with that, I would at least pose that to you, allow that to happen. If you're on the fence, and of those of you who may be voting or not voting on the bill, if you take that in consideration, and with that, I respectfully ask for an aye vote.
I do note that this bill was a gutted amendment on March 24th, and we had gotten some, at least I had gotten some calls from some senators with this comfort of hearing the bill last week, so that's why we put it over a week. But with that, what is the pleasure of the committee? I'm open to.
I mean, we're down to a deadline, so I mean, after today, we have no more, I can't bring it back. My understanding, correct?
Correct.
So.
Would a courtesy motion with that caveat, especially.
Okay, so we have a motion, and we'll do a roll call.
Motion is due pass to Appropriations Committee. Lou, Weiland,
not voting.
Barry Hill, Block,
no.
Block, no. Corbett,
no.
Corbett, no. Galgiani,
not
voting. Hernandez,
aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hill, Padilla.
We'll put their bill back and call for the absent members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And their sergeants could call Senator Hill. We're waiting for him to present. Did we lift the calls for everybody?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Right? I think Senator Padilla is the only one that could add on.
Okay, but we need Hill.
Yeah.
Just wait.
This is almost one of those bills that has to get an interim study.
I mean, really, there would be a what kind of proof would you be if this was not going to be 30 days, right? Which would have been April 24th,
yeah.
Then would have been referred. Or hearing it much earlier than the standard.
Right.
Thank you. I don't think so. I think it should.
Your bills.
That's right. We want to talk about weights and measures. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I'd like to start by accepting all.
You can take your breath. It's okay. It's all right. We're okay.
No, fine. Thank you. Thanks for running. I'd like to start by accepting all of the recommended amendments in comments 7 and 8 as authors' amendments. These amendments clarify that a written violation may be written on the first overcharged item in an inspection, clarifies that a customer can expect a refund of the amount overcharged before the transaction is completed, and makes technical changes and inserts a 3-year sunset into the measure. SB 1328 will create a permanent funding source for the Division of Measurement Standards within the Department of Food and Agriculture. DMS used to be funded solely through general fund dollars. However, with recent budget cuts, this important department has gotten no general fund support. DMS provides critical assistance to county sealers on enforcement matters relating to point-of-sale overcharges. They work with the sealers on cross-county enforcement as well. This funding will come in the future from a $2 charge per business at the time of license renewal that utilizes point-of-sale scanners. This money will be used by DMS to carry out their important consumer protection measures. SB 1328 also stipulates that grocery stores that have a store policy to refund consumer or customer overcharges or provide that item for free will not be assessed a fine or penalty on one item overcharges during a standard inspection. Currently, during an inspection, the county sealers can assess a fine for one overage, but some do not charge for that first violation. Again, the sealers will be able to issue a violation during an inspection with one overcharged item, just not a fine. However, if there is more than one overage, existing fines and penalties apply. We think this is a modest measure that still holds grocers accountable and also provides desperately needed funding for the Division of Measurement Standards. So I do have witnesses here, but I wanted to say that we're trying to work right now with the county sealers and with the retailers to determine exactly the dollars that will be collected from this. We want to make sure that the dollars collected are adequate to fund the programs that are necessary as the operation moves forward, and we want to work with the Department of Finance to see if there's an opportunity to place some of these funds into the general fund budget for next year as well. So to try to fund the department is crucial. So I do have witnesses. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Louis Brown on behalf of the California Grocers Association. We are the sponsor of the bill. This is a measure that has come about as a result of numerous budget workshops and hearings at the Department of Food and Agriculture, where a variety of stakeholders were pulled together by the administration to try to find some reasonable solutions to the general fund hit at the Division of Measurement Standards. And so the grocery industry is sees a lot of the weights and sealers. They have the inspection authority over the scales that are in our stores. They have the inspection authority over the point of sale scale standards or point of sale scanners. Right now, 22 different counties actually have individual county ordinances that allow for their inspectors to come in and inspect those scanners. The other counties, the remaining counties, do not have an ordinance, and those counties are overseen, those inspections, consumer complaints are overseen by the Department of Food and Agriculture. With no funding of the Department of Food and Agriculture, those counties without a local ordinance essentially have no oversight. And so we came with what we thought was a reasonable consensus, a small fee in lieu of some regulatory relief. And we're not changing the law as it relates to overcharges to consumers. When an overcharge to a consumer occurs, which we hope doesn't, we work very hard to make sure that doesn't happen, that is still a violation of law that can be pursued by a county district attorney, can be pursued by other state agencies. What we're looking for is on the front end, when an inspection occurs that the grocers pay for. In those counties where the ordinances are in place, grocers pay for the inspection on the front end. And what we're saying is if there's a chance of a 1 in 50 mistake, that there not be a fine associated with that. There would still be a written violation. So just to get to that point is, in an average grocery store, you have about 10,000 items in that store, hundreds of items coming on and off sale any given week. And those prices they're put in, the scanners are put in by our employees. Human error happens. And so with that many transactions take place, that many sales items coming on and off, there's just bound to be mistakes every now and then. Again, we strive for perfection, but we can't always achieve that. So it was our thinking that if there is that chance where there's a 1 in 50, then that written violation can occur, but there would be no fine associated. If you have 2 in 50, then the existing law takes place. A reinspection is automatically triggered and fines. In addition to that, there is a change in the law that would allow the Secretary of Agriculture to set a uniform standard for the tare weight used in the retail industry, which we think is critically needed in the state of California. So for those reasons, we're asking for an aye vote today.
Next witness.
Thank you, Senator and members of the committee. It's Jim Houston with the Department of Food and Agriculture. We currently do not have a position on the bill, but I thought it would be helpful to understand what the program does at the Division of Measurement Standards. It's been in existence for not quite 20 years, but we provide guidance, oversight, and training at the state level, and we also capture those counties that don't have ordinances themselves. There are sort of two things, I guess, that's helpful to understand about the program. One is the surveillance that's done at the local level where they're going in and they're inspecting and determining sort of the veracity of the system in place to minimize errors. And then the second is the investigation. And I think that's one of the things that is really important at the state level. What we help do is coordinate the investigations with the district attorney, having standardization, understanding what sort of the forms and the way that different district attorneys like to have their investigations put together. That's where the Division of Measurement Standards has a lot of experience and training to help ensure that these investigations can take place. We have seen with the loss of general fund in 2011 a precipitous drop in the number of investigations that we're able to pursue. And so we look forward, certainly really thank the senator for his leadership on this effort and look forward to working with the parties on this bill as it moves forward. Thank you.
Margaret Gladstein on behalf of the California Retailers Association. We thank the author for bringing this forward, and for the reasons cited by Mr. Brown, we are also in support of the bill.
Other witnesses in support? Witnesses in opposition?
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Seiberling on behalf of the California Agricultural Commissioners and Sealers Association. I'll start my comments by saying that we are very pleased to see a bill that gets funding to the state level for DMS. It's an important program. My county sealers all definitely see the value in that, but not at the expense of our regulatory authority. County sealers of weights and measures are tasked with bolstering consumer protection laws at the local level. They make sure that your constituents get what they pay for. Currently, county sealers who inspect point-of-sale devices, also called scanners, do this once a year at best. They do this to make sure that the prices that are compelling customers to buy the products at these grocery and retail stores are being honored at the register. If anything, they suggest the retailers should probably be inspected more often than they're being inspected now. But we have the system we have. We do what we do what we can with the time we're there, and we enforce the laws that exist. This bill will take away the only tool that county sealers have to compel retailers, in this case the grocers, to comply with the law that retailers must honor their prices. It would prevent county sealers from taking action, as we've already discussed, or imposing a penalty for an overcharge discovered during that once-per-year test. Further, under this bill, this freebie overcharge is unlimited in scope, could range from a dime to a dollar to $100, depending on the value of the item. And just to give you a quick idea of what's getting my guys so concerned, county sealers typically do these tests in plain clothes. They go into the stores, they don't identify themselves as a regulator, they come in, they do a sample shopping basket full of items, they take meticulous notes as they're doing the shopping to document the prices that are on the shelf, they run it through the process and then compare it to the receipt at the end of the process. Normal shoppers don't do this. You usually buy what's on sale, you buy what you need, you think you're buying the cheapest items, but you don't necessarily document exactly what you're paying. So my clients assure you that you're getting overcharged more often than you think you are. And again, under current law, if it's a 1 out of 50 error, which is a pixel in the 10,000 items that they have on sale, we can take action on that currently. CACASA opposes this measure because there's been a steady demonstrated improvement in pricing accuracy since these strict liability tests have been put in place. When this all got started back in the mid-90s, you could expect to find 50% of stores out of compliance upon first investigation. Currently, as of last year, 82% of the stores that are inspected by my clients pass these tests with no overcharges. So we think that's a drastic, steady incline of compliance. We want to see that continue to climb. We think that it's not too much to ask that if you're offering something for sale, you honor that price when the person gets to the register. Lastly, if this issue seems familiar to you at all, we were here last year discussing it. We extended the sunset, thanks to Mr. Hill, or Senator Hill, with the same supporters, the grocers. We didn't extend the sunset, we eliminated the sunset on the current program. In last year's analysis, the grocers supported making the current point of sales law permanent, stating that the criteria and methodology established in 2005 has worked effectively for the last 8 years and support removing the sunset date from existing law. So we don't know what changed between last year and this year, but here we are discussing this policy again, and we'd strongly suggest your no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Other witnesses in opposition? Questions from the committee? Senator Corbett.
I just want to ask a question for understanding, and I think Mr. Brown maybe can answer the question. So if there is a one mistake, and say we're dealing with a large chain store, I imagine that those prices have been keyed in across the system. Is that correct usually?
Not necessarily, Senator Corbett, because depending on the region, depending on where those stores are located, they may have different sale items moving in and out. So a lot of those transactions are actually computed each store.
And so is that the sort of the practice? It's store by store?
It is the practice. I have personal experience in this, and my mom works for Save Mart for the last 26 years, and that was the job that she was responsible for a majority of that time. And so, yes, she inputted those for the store in Lemoore, California, and it wasn't across the Save Mart network.
So then if there's a mistake and it's a one-time, it may impact how many, I know it's different from store to store, but how many sales? One mistake is one mistake, but it might impact sales that have occurred in many stores, many times during a particular day. I'm just trying to figure out what the breadth of one mistake really means.
I think that's possible, is that when an inspector comes in, they take their sample of 50, and that's a snapshot in time. There's really no way of knowing, unless we were to take some statistical sampling or some other methodology of when that item that may have triggered the 1 in 50 violation actually went on sale, or how long it was on sale before an inspector found that. We do know that our customers are pretty price savvy, and that we do have customers on a very regular basis. If by chance they are overcharged, they point that out. They've either pointed it out while they're standing in line and watching the scanner, because California law says that that readout must be shown towards the consumer, or they're looking at the receipt after they've left the store and they've come back in. And so how many actual incidents are taking place at given time, I'm not certain. But, you know, I can say that it is not our business to overcharge customers, and we do everything we can to correct that as soon as possible.
Can I just ask a question, the weights and measures person? Or maybe you, I don't know, whoever wants to answer the question. My second question is, if there is a mistake, I know I get the idea there's an annual inspection or almost an annual inspection. If a consumer determines that there has been a mistake, what happens then? Does the consumer have an opportunity to call that in and have it be corrected? And is what are the consequences of that?
Yeah, there are actually three things that the consumer can do. They can certainly contact the grocery store. And from a personal experience, I was at Home Depot last weekend, and I purchased 3 tomato plants and was overcharged and caught it, and they, you know, I mean, they dealt with it right there. So there are instances like Mr. Brown said. So that's the first sort of line. The second is in county ordinance, in counties that have ordinances, you can contact the county ag commissioner's office. So if you go to the LA County or San Diego County ag commissioner's website, they'll have a little hotline that one can call. And then for those counties that don't, that's where the state steps in. And even for some counties that do, you can always call the Division of Measurement Standards, and we'll respond to those complaints. Whether that's, you know, going in and sort of looking at the store, if it seems like it's broader in scope, maybe we'll coordinate with ag commissioners and district attorneys on some sort of investigation. So we try and determine if it's just sort of a, you know, one-time accident, or if there's sort of more afoot. So those are the sort of the range of options that one has.
If there is a problem disclosed, you know, obviously during the annual inspection, a problem occurs and then it's corrected. If a problem occurs that the consumer brings to your attention, mm-hmm. for example, is it then corrected, like system-wide? Or I get the idea of, you know, you get overcharged, yeah. and you get reimbursed right at the counter. But what happens in the system?
Well, and I think, so what you would do if they called us, you know, our first thing, and like I said, if you go to the websites, they do the same thing, which is to direct the consumer back to the store. And we will follow up at the store as well to make sure that the consumer is reimbursed for whatever that overcharge, so that particular incident is corrected. Because it could have been something that was on sale that week, you know, depending on the sort of temporal location, we will respond accordingly. So if it does seem like it's still occurring, the store will correct it. We could, if we've gotten a couple complaints from maybe a couple different counties, that's one of the things that the state does, is we can coalesce all the information from the various counties and spot trends. And so we can respond with a more sophisticated investigation. You can do undercover stings. I mean, it sort of runs the gamut based on what the situation sort of calls for. So, but like the very first thing that a consumer should do and that we ask them to do is go back to the store where they made the purchase and get it fixed then, and then we'll follow up to try and make sure that the problem is limited to that.
There can be an action to correct something not at the time of the annual inspection.
Absolutely.
It's called to your attention.
Okay, absolutely.
That's what I wanted to know. Thank you. Sure, go ahead.
And just one more point on consumer complaints. My clients assure me that consumer complaints are about the worst indicator of a problem. People just simply don't notice as often as they should. That's the purpose of the annual test and a regular test, is to identify those problems, bring them to the attention of the grocer, and get them fixed in a much more quick fashion than consumer complaints could ever address.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Like to close?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for the questions. Thank you, Senator Corbett. I was really surprised to listen to the opposition's concerns, because they didn't raise a concern to the bill itself. So I'm wondering if they actually read the bill, because talking about regular checks, annual checks, importance of honoring the price, not of the change at the expense of the customer, complying with the care, I can't, all of these things are exactly going to occur with this bill. There's nothing in this bill that changes one thing about the inspections, the honesty, honoring the price, nothing. All it's doing. In fact, I had a conference call last week with the ag commissioners in San Mateo and Santa Clara County, the two counties that I represent, and I asked them, do you charge on that first violation? And they said, we can, but most of the time, we don't charge for that first violation. So all we're doing is saying that the money that may be spent, and I want to make sure that there's enough money there to fund the Division of Measurement Standards, and we'll look at that as the bill moves. But that's all this bill is doing, is taking that fine away on that first violation that is generally, and what I learned as well, $100. But the violation is there. The violation is cumulative, since if you hit the second violation, you're required to then pay for that next inspection and move forward with it. So what I heard was nothing related to that specific issue of the fine. We're not lessening those standards. We're not making it more or making it easier for retailers or grocers to violate the standard or the pricing in any way. All it's doing is taking that one issue of the fines. I respectfully ask your IVOS members. Thank you.
Motion. Do we have a motion? Roll call.
Motion is due pass as amended to appropriations. Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Weiland?
Aye.
Weiland, aye. Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Corbett?
Aye.
Corbett, aye. Galgiani?
Aye.
Galgiani, aye. Hernandez? Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye.
Thank you.
8-0.
Right. We'll put this bill, back on call. We're now going to start lifting calls, starting with item one, which is the consent calendars. Let's lift a call on the consent calendar. Call the absent members, please.
Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye.
Consent calendar is out. Item number two, SB 1069, call the absent members.
Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 9-0.
That bill is out. SB 1119, call the absent members.
Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 9-0.
That bill is out. SB 1215, call the absent members.
Lou, Weiland, Berryhill? Galgiani, Hill?
No.
Hill, no. But yeah.
What is it? What's the vote?
It's 1-3.
The vote is 1-3. The bill fails. We'll automatically grant reconsideration. Item number five, SB 1242, call the absent members.
Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 9-0.
Bill is out. SB 1243, call the absent members.
Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 9-0.
The bill is out. SB 1244, call the absent members.
Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 9-0.
The bill is out. SB 1245, call the absent members.
Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, aye. 9-0.
The bill is out. SB 1246, call the absent members.
Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. 9-0.
Bill is out. SB 1247, call the absent members.
Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. 8-1.
The bill is out. SB 1328, call the absent members.
Hernandez? He's not here. He's gone.
The bill is out. SB 1416, call the absent members.
Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye.
That's it, right?
8-1, yes.
Okay. The bill is out.
Anything else? We're done.
We're done.
And that concludes the hearing. Thank you.